Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen, and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
And welcome to the show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me this evening, Mr. Tim Dennis across the board. As always, in studio tonight, we have a live special. Normally, we don't have our guests in studio with us, so it's a pleasure when we're able to bring the guys in. We have Chris Fleming and Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence and Dead Famous are joining us this evening. We're going to talk about the event that we just did here this weekend at the Palmer House. We're also going to be talking about the use of psychics and sensitives on a paranormal investigation, and are we becoming too reliant on technology? We'll get into that. We're also going to talk about Cloverfield, the movie we went out and saw today. I just want to tell everybody that joined us at the Palmer this weekend, thank you very much for coming out. We had a great time. It was good to hang out with you all. We look forward to hanging out with you more. By the end of this week, we will have some new trips up on our site at darknessevents.com. So you're going to want to check that out, www.darknessevents.com. And tonight we're doing something special for those of you that are tuning in and didn't notice our bulletin. We are doing a live webcast of the show. So you can actually go to paranet.tv. That's paranet.tv, paranet.tv. Click on it and you can watch the show live as Chris, Patrick, Tim, and I are right here in the studio. We'll be doing the entire show with the webcast, and we'll also be taking your questions from the chat room. So come on into the chat room, have some fun with us. We got about 51 people in there right now. It's a good chance to meet some other good people with similar likes and interests in the paranormal. We'll get started off with the show here. Let's talk real, guys. Just before we get into the rest of the trip, we all went out and saw Cloverfield today.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And for the people that are not familiar with what Cloverfield is yet, Cloverfield's kind of like a new Americanized version of a Godzilla-type movie, mixed with a Blair Witch element, the documentary-style filming element. I will say, my brother texted me yesterday after he saw it, and he said I was nauseous the whole time, all that movement, and it got me today. I kept getting the sweats and my stomach was rolling while I was watching the movie. So if you are predisposed to motion sickness, do be careful, because that will get you. All you have to do is close your eyes. But overall, what did you guys think of the movie?
I thought it was really cool. I mean, I actually felt intense, as if I was there. You know, the movie shot in a way from first person, as if you are part of the action through the entire movie. You don't really see any displaying shots of the scenes or anything. It's usually filmed from the one cameraman that's following everybody during the entire movie. I thought that was very compelling, because it got me feeling as if I was there with them experiencing some of the things. So I thought it was pretty original in filmmaking.
I totally agree with Chris. I saw The Blair Witch like everyone else did back in the 1990s, and I thought that was just a very unique, very groundbreaking way of making cinema, using the documentary style first person perspective. But I didn't think it would be anything that they could ever sustain. I didn't think they could ever actually film another movie using that first person perspective with a camcorder. And they did it. They combined The Blair Witch with Godzilla. And
You see One Night in Paris? That was shot with a hand.
Right. Okay.
No idea what you're talking
the second
about.
Movie that they could make like that. Okay. I'm sorry.
Chris, what are you talking about? You've got frequent flyer miles on that website. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I thought it was good. You know, after a couple hours, now that the movie's over, I don't know. Something about it just made me feel cheated. Maybe because, like you, Chris, and Patrick, we all grew up watching the big Caillou movies, the Godzilla, Gamera, Mothra, Gamera.
Ultraman.
Right, all those guys. And, there was just something dynamic to it. Even in the crappy rubber suits, there was just something to this. And though it felt like you were part of the action, mm-hmm. I felt a disconnect from what the hell was going on there, which I guess is kind of how it must have seemed for like the people when, you know, to go back to 9/11 when the planes hit the buildings, mm-hmm. To not know what the hell's going on and have that disorientation.
So, but that creates that fear, though.
Right, right. I agree. That gives you that point. So I can see that fitting right. in really well. But I don't know. I just felt like there should have been something more to the monster for the little bits we got to see of it.
Well, I mean, I can understand. At the end of the movie, when the credits start rolling, I mean, you're sitting there glued to the credits because you're expecting more. You want to see more. You want to know, you know, there's spoilers here. You want to know where the monster came from, that type of stuff.
That is what the sequel is for, my friend.
Okay.
You
Patrick's saying there's going to be a sequel here, and I'm like, I don't think so.
There's totally going to be a sequel, and you are a captive audience, and you are too, and you know you will see it on opening day. Yes, you will.
Of course.
We didn't go this time on opening day. We waited 2 days. That was
only because
restraint.
We couldn't. We wanted to. We tried.
The matinee.
We tried to finagle a way out.
See, but you know, this movie reminded me a little bit of The Mist in dealing with the monster. Some of the scenes that you do see of the monster. But, you know, getting back to what you're saying, Dave, is you are there with them, these individuals that running around the city and with the cameraman. You don't know where this monster is. And you just right. can't look out a window and see him because you're on ground level. You know, this monster is so big, it's hiding behind buildings, doing all these things throughout the city. You can hear some destruction, the military. So it's scary because at any time, this monster can be turning around the corner.
Right.
Well, here I think that's what's compelling.
Here in the chat room, Mac Drizzle brought the cowbell, whatever the hell that means, said, come on, guys, this was made by the same guy that made Lost, like he's going to tell you everything
exactly.
in the first episode.
Exactly.
Very good point.
Good point.
We now, have a captive audience.
Speaking of the Blair Witch and the Cloverfield movie, we have a really cool guest that we're going to have on next week. And for those of you that are not familiar with the show, there's a show out called Monster Quest. Chris, Patrick, have you guys heard of the show yet?
Yeah, I've watched it.
Okay,
yeah,
great
like
show.
It.
This Wednesday, like they're going to be covering some of like the werewolf stories,
uh-huh.
Beast of Bray Road.
Uh-huh.
There's the Michigan Dog Man. And I don't know if you guys have seen this. This is very Blair Witch feel to it. I recommend this to people. Go check it out at YouTube. And type in Michigan Dog Man and watch this little video. This film was found, and it's from, I think, like the early 70s. It's like an 8mm Super 8 film that was filmed, you know, people out on their vacation, and it keeps cutting, kind of like Cloverfield did, you know, cutting to different scenes. And at one point, as they're driving, you see this creature walking, you know, walking in the field. They pull over, and they kind of go after this to see what it is. And they finally come up on it, and when it turns around, it kind of moves like a gorilla. I mean, I thought it was a gorilla at first, but then all of a sudden it goes up on two legs and just hauls ass at him. Creepy as hell. And I was waiting for the sting, you know, to be it was some kind of fake film footage. But then there's quotes from Eastman Kodak Company saying that this is original stock film footage. Looks like it was developed in about 1973 or whatever. Gives all this information about these things, and they had some experts weigh in on it. But it looks really frightening. So, you know, it's amazing to me that it's, you know, 30, 40 years later, and all of a sudden this footage is surfacing. But we're going to have the guy on our show next week. His name is Steve Cook, and he's going to be on our show talking to us about the Michigan Dogman. We're going to talk about some of the other creatures that are out there. But, I wanted to mention that since we're kind of talking about this whole film deal. So, again, for people that are out there and interested, people can also go to the website and look at his information, which is Michigan-dogman.com. Again, that's Michigan-dogman.com. And it's a great little bit of video. It's very compelling to watch, so check it out during commercial break or something during the show here. Again, if you're listening in right now, you can listen in live. You can also watch us at Paranet.tv this evening. For those of you listening to the archive version of the show, unfortunately, there will not be an archive version of the video, so that will not be up. Patrick is recording the video of tonight's deal, but that'll just be for us to, you know, look at and have fun with in the future. I don't know that we'll ever actually air it anywhere again. So this may be the only time you see us all live doing the radio show.
Why not, Dave?
Well, let's talk, guys. You know, we're going on a year together of doing events. This January, as a matter of fact, it's been 1 year since we did our first event. We did the Queen Mary last year in Long Beach, California. And you know, since then, what have we done? Eastern State Penitentiary. Chris has been there. Waverly Hills. We've done Stanley numerous
twice.
Times. Queen Mary again. We've just done the Palmer House. What do you guys? What's your take on bringing this out to the people and doing events like this? I mean, you know, this isn't groundbreaking, but it certainly is done differently. by bringing these type of trips out to people. What do you guys, do you think that's a good way to help introduce people into the field of the paranormal and get a better handle on it?
Well, the first thing I think is it's to get away from your regular regime of work, you know, and being at home, getting out of the house, doing stuff. You know, you see these TV shows, you read these books about investigating. This gives you a chance to get out there and go to those places. I mean, even, you know, Patrick and I have talked in the past how exciting it is for us to just even be a part of this, to go to these places that we've always wanted to go to. I mean, like the Stanley Hotel, Waverly Hills. It gives us a chance to get out there, too. So I can just imagine, you know, other fans out there of ghost hunting and of certain TV shows want to get out there also. And this is that opportunity that they can take advantage of.
Now, I'll mention something real quick for the people in the room that are watching. I'm seeing questions pop up of how can I chat and watch this. If you go up into the corner of your screen and minimize the screen, not all the way, but use the little double boxes to make the screen smaller, and then get your chat box up and make that screen smaller, and then grab the sides and drag them in. You can actually have them. I had them on my screen earlier, and I'll even actually do that while I'm talking here so Ben can show people on video.
This is Video Professor by Dave Schrader.
Yeah, exactly, but it's just a quick way to do it so that that way everybody can chat and watch what's going on.
Will be available after the show.
Exactly.
And I'll go to Paranet. But eventually, go ahead and talk a little bit, Patrick, from your side. What do you think of the events and doing things like
this? I love them. It is an absolute honor to connect with the fans and fellow paranormal investigators, and not only get a chance to meet these people, but learn from them as well. You know, there seems to be this predisposition that you go to these events, and you know, Chris, myself, you know, Jason and Grant at the big events that we do, that we're experts in this field, and I'm very adamant about pointing it out that there are no such things as paranormal experts. You can't be an expert in this field because it is a field of lots of uncertainties, lots of random events that we can't really quantify, we can't make reproduce on command. And I enjoy, as much as meeting people, learning other people's techniques, learning what they're out there doing.
Exactly.
A great friend of mine, his name is Jason. He's with The Light out of New York City, Paranormal Research Group. Great guy. He's kind of coupled what the groundbreaking work that Chris has done with the K2 meter, using another device to confirm. He's kind of got a two-faceted approach to working with this device that he's developing to get not only a response on the K2 meter, but on this device he's developing as well. And, you know, had we not done these events, I might not have ever had the chance to actually, you know, talk with Jason at any kind of length about this device. So it's very much, as a researcher, for myself, it's very much a learning experience as well.
Yeah, it's crazy to meet all these people at these events that have such great ideas on the paranormal and are putting them to work and able to manipulate and change things over so quickly so that it adapts to what we're doing on investigations. And some of the, you know, you think you know a lot about certain parts of the field, and then you bring up something and all of a sudden one of these people in your audience that just looks like, you know, the guy you'd be playing softball with on Sunday and drinking beers with, right? And all of a sudden he goes into this 20-minute dissertation of exactly why the polarizing light effects of a certain orb can be manufactured by using this camera lens. And he goes into this technical babble that you look at and you're
amazing.
Like, holy crap, how did you know that? Oh, well, I happen to used to work for Kodak Film, and I knew how to, you know, and they give you this information.
Awesome.
And they're able to come up with just great great background. And we do have some fun people. It's become like a family. We mentioned it whenever we're on here. You get kind of this cool family environment when we're doing these live events. And I will mention for the Queen Mary and Stanley event that we're going to be doing here in November and December, we're going to have Chris, we're going to have Patrick, Tim, myself, Jay, and Grant. And then it's pretty much a whole new lineup of speakers, including cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman will be joining us. We've got Jeff Ballinger, who's going to be out there, fantastic author, a great speaker.
He is.
Yeah, and we've just got some great new speakers that we're going to be adding to the mix. Michael and Marty Perry are going to join us out at the Stanley this year in November. Just, you know, keep tuned. We're going to keep trying to add new speakers, new topics, so that the events are new. Aside from the celebrities, you get a chance to hear all new speakers as well. Let's go back now and start talking about the Palmer. Patrick, you made a good comment I liked about it, the fact that when we got there, you're like, oh my God, it's like the Stanley Light. It's this really, really cute little hotel.
It is.
It's got this antique feel to it, kind of like the Stanley,
right?
But it's just a reduced
more
version.
Condensed. More condensed, more compressed. It is.
Now, when you got there, Chris, you're a psychic, you're sensitive, you see dead people.
Mm-hmm.
When you got in there, was there any of this overwhelming feeling of, you know, this place is overrun with spirits, or was it quiet to you? What was your first impression of the building when we
My
got there?
My first impression was, it's cold, I'm staying inside.
I get beat up for this because, you know, everybody wants to know in Minnesota, they're like, Dave, why are you doing an event in January? And my God, hand to God, go check the almanac. For the last 10 years, we've had the most mild winters ever in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, especially around the Twin Cities area, I'm like, this is going to be nothing. And even if we would have had it last week, it was like 40, 45 degrees. This weekend, I think at one point we hit negative 28 degrees outside. People were just absolutely freezing. But
this is why I moved to the south, by the way, to get away from this stuff.
But no, you know, getting back to your question, you know, when I first got there, I just tried to get acclimated in the room, everything, and say hi to everybody. And it was interesting. You know, the first night going into the basement doing the investigation, you want to start talking about some of the stuff that happened now?
Yeah. Well, sure, yeah. Well, yeah. But I want to know, I mean, what floor, as a psychic sensitive, because Patch and I, we don't really
We're totally insensitive. Yeah.
Where did
we
you feel when
that.
You first walked in there? What floor did you really get hit with that you thought, boy, this is going to be the floor I'm excited to investigate?
The basement, because when I got there, Kelly came to me and said, you know, there's something going on in the basement.
Oh,
do you want
right.
to go down there? So
Kelly,
I went
the
down
owner.
There with her, yeah. And right away I felt it, as if they're all down there. So it was intriguing because I got the opportunity Friday night to take everybody down there for the first time, and it was amazing. You know?
And it is creepy in the dark,
yeah,
isn't
it? It's very
when you go down there with
yeah.
the lights on, it's just kind of this old-looking building basement. And when those lights go up, man, that's just a really creepy place
right?
to be. Yeah,
1800s.
Actually, the original building there, I guess, burned down, and then it was rebuilt again in 1901 right. or so. So, yeah.
But I'm told the foundation is original.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So we've had that happen. So now we started, again, with our events, what we do is we usually have the first night kind of a meet and greet and a socializing time, and we stream the show like you're watching it right now. We're going to be trying to stream some of the other live events as we go forward so that you'll be able to you know, partake in the live events and hear all the great speakers that we have.
By the way, it looks like we have about 57 viewers for the stream.
Oh, good. So people
tonight.
Are just checking it out and
people
finding
are.
It. And you can check that out by going, again, to paranet.tv. And after we do our little meet and greets on the first night, then we broke down for the smaller event to do ghost hunting for two nights. We sent Chris off to the basement, Patrick up to the third floor. Then we had Lisa Hottinger from the Twin Cities Paranormal Society, who has investigated this location, I think, about 7-8 times, along with Teresa. They went on the second floor, and they were doing the investigation. They were leading it. And then Tim and I kind of stayed on the main floor where we led some EVP talks and seminars the first night. Second night, we did the Frank's Box demonstrations, which we actually aired live over the webcast. But you guys went down for your first. Now, we know that you were in the basement. That kind of creeped you out. But, Patrick, when you went up to third floor, you know, being a paranormal investigator again, let me ask you maybe, when you started doing the events – you know, or the event there, when you came in the building, did you get any feel of thick, haunted, weird, creepy feel at all? Or because it felt very homey to me. I don't feel
yeah,
it. As a matter of fact, I slept more soundly at the Palmer Hotel than I have at any event we've ever done.
It is. It really was.
Chris is over there.
I'm still yawning. I'm so tired.
Yeah, we're always sleep deprived when we do these events because right. we're up investigating till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's a long day for us. I usually don't have too much trouble falling asleep. In fact, Tim gave me a 4-hour energy drink about an hour and a half before I fell asleep on Friday night, and I was still able to fall asleep. I was beat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you didn't get any kind of thick,
no.
creepy feeling?
No,
at all?
Totally not no. at all. It was very, like you said, very homey, very comfortable. It was a very comfortable feeling there.
I got the feeling when I went in there this time. I worried. I was like, oh, crap, this doesn't feel haunted to me at all. You know, I was worried because of the people coming there. That it just didn't have that sense of creepiness to me or like there was some bad juju going on, you know. Now, you started off on the third floor. First night of investigations, what kind of stuff went on for you?
Not a whole lot, to be perfectly honest.
Okay,
I threw my teeth. Oh, my God! No, seriously, we basically staked ourselves out in room 17, and I had one of the Shack Hack Frank's boxes
right.
in there with me. We got a few EVPs that came through. We did some EVP sessions. Then we did the box sessions, and this was the crazy denominator for the span of the event was how many times it sounded like my voice came through on the Frank's box. Patrick Burns, trick. You know, they call me Patch a couple of times. I mean, not only the floors where we were doing the box sessions, but like you said last night when you were in the on the first floor.
Right. While you were doing an investigation somewhere else, I said, do you like the ghost hunters here? Who do you like? And it said, Patrick.
Aw.
So it called you out. I said, what did you think about Chris? Patrick was its answer. Ben was in there. Remember that, Ben? It was funny because it was like, your little ghost friends love you, Pat.
Either that or they want to kick my ass here. I haven't figured it out yet.
So did you guys get any evidence aside from? And it is weird because the Frank's box actually called out Patrick Burns, and we've got that on audio. I think Tim's working like a devil to try to find the EVP on that. Right, Tim? Did we ever get that emailed over to us?
Which one?
The one that the box calls Patrick Burns' name?
Yeah.
Okay. Kitty just said, yeah, she got tired of hearing my name called out on the Frank's
exactly.
box.
Do you have that one handy, or is it available to play, Tim?
Yeah.
Why don't we play that before we head off into the first commercial break? So we're going to do this. Now, this is the first night of doing the Frank's box for you, and you turned it on, and I think it has her you asking, do you know who I am? Do you remember my name?
Right.
Let's see if we can get this.
Hold on.
Hang on.
Yeah. Are there 10 spirits down here?
Hello, Patrick.
Well, that wasn't the one I was thinking we had. The other one is Patrick goes, do you remember me? Do you know my name? Patrick Burns.
Yeah. And then so there was another one. I turned the box on, literally, and I opened my mouth. I was getting ready to say something, and it said, hi, Patrick. And I was like...
Well, that's interesting. Bill Murphy has mentioned to us that the boxes seem to take ownership of us after a while, mm-hmm. and they will start referring to you. I gave you a box, Chris, for Christmas, and I gave it to you at the Palmer. You said you turned it on, and within a few minutes, it said your name.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Cool. Well, let's take our first break. You're listening live, and for those of you in the live video stream, you'll be able to still see us during commercial break. Otherwise, we're going to go to commercial. We'll be right back with more right after this.
It will keep you on the edge of your seat.
I must have drank me about 15 Dr. Peppers.
I got to pay.
Just don't get any on the floor. Hurry back. There is more to come from the darkness on the edge of town. When Dave was a young boy, he once awoke to find himself staring directly into the eyes of a shadow person. Turns out it was just his life-size cardboard cutout of Donny Osmond.
Go away, little girl. Go away, little girl.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
And welcome back to the show. And for our dear friend Lisa with TCPS, yes, Lisa, honey, we know that. We already told people that they can see us during the commercials, but thanks for giving us a heads up. We'll talk filthy during that, as long as we're not on the air doing naughty stuff, right, Tim? We're back on the air. All right. Anyway, back to...
The internet's not regulated by the
FCC. I don't know them.
Yes. But anyway, here we are back on the show. We're talking about the different things. Now, what other EV... Well, we'll get back to EVPs when Tim comes back in a minute here. But, okay, so Chris, you started off in the basement on the first night. What kind of experiences can you tell us you had with the team when you were investigating?
Three things. One, of course, we were getting some K2 meter readings, you know, which you can pretty much get anywhere when you're doing investigations, when you come in contact with the spirit. The, mm-hmm. the other thing was we got the temperature to drop using one of my infrascans. We had the temperature drop about 20 degrees.
Yeah, I heard that you had that happen two or three times.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. We did it upstairs on the third floor, too, which was dramatic results. Everybody got to witness it. I made sure that everybody was gathered around. We started out with the control reading about 72 degrees, and we got it to go down. I think it was like 50. And everybody witnessed it, and it was cool to see. Same thing that happened on Ghost Hunters. But the most dramatic thing that happened in the basement was this one girl who's been to some of our events, pretty quiet, reserved.
Right. Kim?
She had a walk-in. She started feeling a little bit uneasy. We were right near the one part of the basement where they found bones. They believe that there was a body that was buried underneath the stairs there. And they haven't dug far enough, but they did receive some bones, and from what they're telling me, the bones just disappeared. We were right by there, and Kim started feeling really uneasy. I asked her, okay, have you eaten? Have you been drinking? You know, hypoglycemic? Are you tired? And to all of which, she said no. Well, then she says, you know, I really, really don't feel good. I'm feeling very, very like I'm going to pass out. Well, a friend of mine, Chris, was videotaping the whole thing. We caught an anomaly that was flying around her and headed right towards her. You then see me walk around. I grab Kim. I'm holding her. I said, it's okay. Just relax. Just relax. All of a sudden, Kim passes out.
Do you think maybe she passed out because you were holding her?
No.
They're going to say that in the chat room, so I'm going to throw it out there.
No, what we were dealing with, it's not demonic possession. All it is a spirit or ghost that was trying to make contact with us. Now, because I channel, sometimes I do non-local communication. I wasn't doing that. What tends to happen in a lot of investigations is someone else that's there tends to have walk-in. Why? I can't.
Is it a walk-in or is it an energy drain? Is the spirit like kind of leeching off that energy?
Well, that's a good point you said that, because looking at the video, we do see an anomaly come out of her, and then another one swings around and goes right back towards her. So, yes, it was draining the energy, but what can happen is if that energy stays there, it then begins to try to communicate through that person, which I was hoping which would happen. And just so everybody knows, there was no danger involved. She was very calm. I was very calm. Everybody else was. We were trying to establish a form of communication. Needless to say, unfortunately, the spirit did not last that long in her and eventually left. She felt fine as soon as she was removed from the location. But the fact that we got this on video and it was a collective experience, I think to me it was just amazing for everybody else to see what goes on when you're dealing with a spirit that is possible possession or a walk-in.
You know, Marley from our chat room wants to know, why do you think somebody would faint when something like that happens? Do you think it is just because of the flux of energy and the transference?
Very possible. Now, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. So I can't explain what happens to the body. What I can tell you, though, is when another soul or spirit comes into the body, tries to meld with yours or push you out, you tend to just go to sleep. Hmm. I don't know why. I don't know how, but that's what happens.
All right. Now, so after you had that experience, what other communication did you have that night, other than the fact your teeth were chattering from being 90 degrees below zero in the basement of an old building?
No, it was interesting that there was a male down there. There was a female. There was a little boy also. And in one room, there was a gentleman that I wouldn't call him a gentleman. He wasn't really that nice of a guy.
Right.
But didn't want us there. It was pretty much he was like, get out of here, you know, that type of stuff. And he's actually the one, I believe, that affected Kim. We then had the temperature go down, which I asked him to bring the temperature down, and I think that was pretty cool. There wasn't really any long conversations going on, a little bit of place memory and history of the place, dealing with that there was livestock that I felt that was in there, the fire, which Kelly confirmed, also that there was something violent that used to go on there in the basement. So it was interesting getting that type of place memory. But I think the most of the communication that I did was on the third floor the second night.
Okay, well, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about the communication you were making there.
On the third floor the second night, some people were in there earlier and told me that they were using the Radio Shack-type Frank's box, and the spirits were asking for my name in room 22, so I decided to go in there with this device, which I tried using in the basement with not much success. Well, we go in there, and sure enough, says my name, and I ask it, what room am I staying in? And it sounded like children all together saying 18. That freaked me out. It was clear as day. Everybody in the room heard it. We were going around the room having people ask questions. One gentleman says, what's my name? And all of a sudden a voice goes, Tim, Timothy, and his name was Tim. Mm. So what was compelling was that it wasn't just responding to me. Anybody else that was in the room that was asking questions was getting answers. And they were very clear answers. And the interesting thing was we said, one individual said, who's going to be the president of the United States? And it said Clinton.
Okay. Well, you know what? Something I'm interested in with this, and let's at least mention this to people as we keep talking about a Frank's box. For some of you that are still not familiar with what a Frank's box is, it was created by Frank Sumption. He received messages on creating this communication box that would actually scan AM or FM radio frequencies randomly. And as you would ask questions for it, it would essentially, the spirits would piece together sounds and voices and words to create an answer for your questions. And he was getting great results. Frank makes the boxes. He does not sell them. He gifts them to people. Then there is a, I guess there's a new version of the box that's being made commercially, and it sells for about $400. Well, Radio Shack also has an AM/FM radio scanner that if you learn how to do this, you simply take it apart, and there's a mute pin. If you can break the mute pin off and put it back together, it'll continually scan up and down the frequency in the dial, so that way you can try to make communication and ask questions. Well, we had, I think, three or four of these on site with us at the event. We had one in the main floor. The girls from TCPS had it on the second floor. Chris had one up on the third floor the second night, and Patrick had one down in the basement. So we were Frank's boxing the entire place just to see what we could do. Now, we had some interesting results. I know in our exploration of it the second night, Tim's a big skeptic about the box, as am I in some ways, But one of the interesting things was I said, can you, because it was calling off names for everybody else, I said, can you tell me my middle name? And it clearly yelled out Warren, which is not a real normal middle name. Mm-hmm. It's not names that you hear that often. And even Tim heard it say the name Warren. So that was kind of interesting. And it would call out for Patrick. And I'd like to talk to Bill Murphy if he's in. Maybe he can call into the show in a little bit. One of the things we noticed that's so strange, and Chris, you've talked to a lot of spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Cursing doesn't seem to be such a big thing, but on these Frank's boxes,
yeah,
these guys swear like sailors.
Yeah,
worse than Tim and Patrick a few minutes ago. I mean, what do you attribute that to?
Well, you know, first, just to kind of compliment what you were saying there, I wasn't too sold on it. You know, at first when I turned it on, I got my voice, and then when we went up to the basement and first went upstairs, I was getting a headache from the darn thing. You know, where it's scanning all the channels, and I was like, oh, this is such a waste of time. But when we went into room 22, when it was being specific, my sister's name, I even said, okay, what is Dave's last name? And you heard Schrader. It's just amazing that this stuff is actually picking up information. But the problem that you can run into, no different than the Ouija board, is you are going to get some low-level entities that are going to be pushing themselves through, going to be realized that there's a form of communication going on. They're now going to start coming towards wherever that light is, that energy is of the communication, and they're going to start speaking through it also, because we had a lot of F words come through there, swear words. You know, and I said, hey, what do you think about this? And I said, creep. You know, just start saying, you know, negative things.
Right.
When that happens, you know, you don't get scared. You don't freak out. You just set parameters. Say, listen, I don't want any negative stuff coming through. I want some good spirits, spirits of the light, whatever, spirit guides to kind of help.
Right.
You be specific. Set down what you want, and then most of the time, they're going to go away. They're going to be pushed out.
Okay. But this, yeah, because like I said, that was just crazy that the potty mouth boxes were really going pretty hard and heavy last night. Now, doing an investigation at a place like the Palmer, a lot of the people always want to know, how in God's name are we doing an investigation with, you know, when we bring 100 to 200 people to an event? When we do our larger events, what we'll do is we usually break the event over two nights for the ghost hunting. We take 100 people ghost hunting one night and the second 100 the second night. We then break those groups down into smaller pods, so there are between 20 to 25 people in a pod that go off. Like, one group will go with Jay and Grant to the concert hall at the Stanley. One will go to room 217 with Patrick. You know, a group will go with Chris to the fourth floor at the... we'll go to the fourth floor with, you know, one of the other ghost hunter teams, and that's the way it works out. And then people break up into smaller pods to investigate. But a lot of people tend to believe, guys, that if you have a lot of people there, no activity is going to happen because there's just too many people and stuff going on. What do you guys make of that? I mean, we've had some crazy results with 100 or 200 people on an investigation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you attribute that to?
Pat?
Gosh, I don't know. You know, when I do my own investigations with my own team, I prefer a smaller group of people because it's just that much easier to keep tabs on who is where. You know, when you have a large group of people, in my opinion, anything over about half dozen people, it starts to become a nightmare, a logistical nightmare to try and keep track of where everybody is. But on these events that we do, at the darkness events, everybody is surprisingly well behaved. You know, they listen to our lead. When we ask them to stay in one location, when we ask them to you know, keep their voice down when we're trying to record an EVP session, you would never know we have 25 people in this room when we're doing an EVP session. And you know, maybe this is attributable to the fact that as this has become more and more of a common hobby among a lot of people, maybe more and more people are starting to understand the protocol that we ask of people when they investigate. You know, maybe this is just a sign of the times, and we're getting a better crop of paranormal investigators. But you know, I have some horror stories in the past within my own ghost hounds organization, where you know, a group of 10 people, you know, sounds like a group of 30 people. You just can't get them to shut up. But at the darkness events, it's been great.
That's because we use tasers and mace.
Yeah.
Keeps everybody in line.
And duct tape when all else fails.
Chris, do you think it's because of, you know...
Yes.
Do you think it's because of the energy we bring to this that amps them all up?
Yes. I've talked about this before when we first started doing these events. Why do these things happen with all these people? And the thing I have to tell you is, and I'm not saying this in an egotistical way, Sometimes it even surprises me, and I get very upset when nothing happens, is that many places that I go to, things happen. I've talked to many people, have the same thing happen. One thing I've noticed about Patrick has things happen all the time, too. I think that's because we become open to it. We believe, we know, we're experienced in communicating with the spirits at some level, whether scientific or psychic. They're attracted to that. They understand. So if we walk into a place where they normally don't communicate with people, and they see us communicating with one spirit or attempting that, they recognize that thought pattern, they recognize that energy, so they approach us and say, well, listen, I want to talk to you. Oh, my God, you know I'm here. You're trying to listen to me. I want to tell you something. That happens.
Well, what do you guys make of the fact, you know, we automatically go to the assumption when somebody gets poked or their hair gets pulled mm-hmm. or they get pinched or punched or whatever,
okay.
that it's automatically a demon or a malevolent spirit.
Bullshit.
Why?
Bullshit. Why? Is every single person that does something wrong or says something wrong a criminal? No, they're not.
Right.
Okay. Why is it we feel that something we don't see because it does something and it scares us that it's a demon? It's not a demon. Get that out of your head. I don't know who's putting that in people's heads, but stop it, because that's not true. The only thing that is a demon is a creature that has decided or entity to take on that responsibility or that form. There are many spirits out there that are earthbound that are confused. Some just trying to get our attention. If they slap you or they touch you, they're not a demon. They're just trying to get your attention.
Right. That's what I wanted to mention. It's very childlike. I mean, it's like, this is all I can do.
Exactly.
Because how many hundreds of people go into these locations and we all ask the same 8 stupid questions? You know, is there anybody here that wants to talk? Is there anything we can do to help you? What can we do for you? You know? And none of us hear them. Does that frustrate the spirits on the other side when people try to communicate and don't hear them and don't see them?
Of course. But, you know, when I first went to Eastern State Penitentiary, we did Dead Famous.
Mm-hmm.
And I got terrified because I had a camera in one hand, a flashlight in the other hand. They both went dead in this dark, dark corridor. I felt all the spirits around me, the entities and everything. It was scaring the heck out of me. I ran out of there and I said, I was afraid to go there. I thought they were all bad spirits, this and that. We went there for the darkness event.
Mm-hmm.
I hung out there a little bit by myself with a couple other people. We saw the shadow people, which was just amazing, seeing these shadows go back and forth. And I realized that a lot of them were just misunderstood. They were stuck there. They were confused. They had psychological problems when they were in the physical form, still were a little messed up mentally as spirits. They weren't evil. They weren't demons. What was I afraid of? I was afraid of that which I did not understand.
Right.
I was afraid of the dark because everything went out. They were just showing me that they were there, probably wanting to communicate, but I didn't take enough, take an opportunity to actually talk to them. I just ran out of there. So what we have to understand is sometimes our fears get the better of us and put things in our heads when we really just need to step back, observe, and understand that someone's trying to reach out to us.
Good point. We're going to take our second break. For those of you that are interested in more information, you can check out the Palmer House online. You can also go to Twin Cities Paranormal Society. They've done a number of investigations there where they've got some of their evidence up. We've got some EVPs and some information we're going to share here in a few minutes. We'll be back with all of that and more of your questions right after this.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs! Oh, baby, when she moves,
Thank you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Are you ready for some adventure? Swashbuckling action? Pirates? High seas battles? How about a little history, romance, and haunting Celtic mysticism thrown into the mix? If so, you have got to read The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare, the new book by author-illustrator Scotty Roberts, set in England, Ireland, and Scotland of the 16th century. Irish Lord Tam O'Hare sets out on a quest to find and rescue a little girl from the hands of the very folk of the Dark Shadowland. On his way, he runs headlong into adventure and intrigue from all quarters in the form of wolves, foxes, and pirating rabbits. Oh, and did I mention Tam O'Hare is, well, a rabbit? This book will not be available in stores until late this fall. But you can get your advanced copy of The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare now by going to www.tamohare.com. That's www.tamohare.com. The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare. you'll never trust a raccoon with a sword again.
You hear footsteps and things bumping and banging in the middle of the night. Could it be paranormal activity? Or is it just Dave and Tim raiding your fridge?
Beer.
Strange things happen in the darkness on the edge of town.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show tonight. Why? I don't know. The guys are just chatting. I guess they don't realize we're on the air, Tim.
No.
New kids on the block. We're going to be doing the live...
They do podcasts,
too. I know.
What's up with that?
We got a live show going on here. Again, this is why we don't usually do live shows in the studio with our guests. They're crazy men. And we're doing a podcast for people that are just, or webcast people that are just tuning in. If you have an interest, you can watch this online tonight at paranet.tv. Chris, let me mention real quick for you, how can people get a K2 meter? We have a lot of people in the chat room that asked about K2s.
Just go to my website, unknownmagazine.com. You'll see the little graphic and banner there for getting a K2. And the one thing you need to know is I've got special instructions that I had printed and created on the technique and methods I use that are very important. That is the method and technique to use to communicate with a device. Otherwise, you just go walking around. You have no idea why it's blinking.
And also, so keep that in mind. In Korean.
Yes.
It's not in Korean.
And guys, no pressure, but my 5-year-old son said, Uncle Chris, Uncle Patrick, Uncle Chick, no more swearing.
Oh. Yeah, Tim. See what you started?
Nice.
Shucks.
Oh, hey.
Sorry.
Oh, God. We need help.
And no, we're not drinking. We're drinking soda pop.
Yeah,
as far as they know. Right.
All right. So what EVPs do we have set up there right now?
Kidding,
Timothy.
Just one.
What do we have set up?
One.
All these people tell us they're going to send us all of these EVPs, and then they don't come through for us.
What the heck? Come on now.
It's a shame.
20 minutes left in the show.
Exactly.
Yep. This one actually was captured.
Captured.
Answer your phone.
And again, remember, it's TwinCitiesParanormalSociety.com. Again, TwinCitiesParanormalSociety.com, and you can hear a bunch of their evidence and some of the EVPs that they've collected. We'll be shooting over some of the EVPs that we've got to them so they can put it up there as well, since they were part of the investigation this weekend.
I don't remember this off the top of my head, so I got
to
look it up.
Okay. Just go ahead and just hit it. Let's listen to it.
No pressure, man.
Let's see. Maybe I'll remember the story if we...
All right. Here we go.
Dude, I need a beer. I need a hard cider.
There it was. It was right after she says, I need a hard cider, which is what all good paranormal investigators should say, right?
Right.
What was the thing that it said, Patrick? Do you remember that? Right after, I need a hard cider. It's like, so... cool
do
or
I
so or good or something
so
like that.
So do I or so good, yeah. I think it was so good.
So hit it one more time. We'll play it out.
Dude, I need a beer. I need a hard cider.
So good.
Yeah.
So happy.
So happy. That's what it was. Okay.
Whatever.
So we've got that. And then I've got, I don't know if I can find
that's what you think, Tim.
Let me see.
I'm just going to use this clip from now on when Patrick speaks.
Dude, I need a beer.
I need a beer.
I need a beer.
Let me see if I can.
I don't need a beer. I need a hard cider.
Dude, I need a beer.
All right, Tim. I'm going to try to pull up this other one that was sent to us. This was actually gathered in September at the Palmer House, and this was done in the lobby. This was kind of a creepy little EVP, and they were willing to share it with us for the show tonight, so I'm going to play it. And it's the classic Get Out. You'll hear her kind of talk for a few seconds. It's kind of a weird buffering thing on my computer, but then all of a sudden you'll hear, Get out. And this was in the lobby. So let me pull this microphone down.
Look where he's putting it, champ.
What the heck?
That is called a feedback loop in radio, kids.
All right. Ready? Here we go.
Here we go. Ready?
Can you hear that? Make their presence known.
That would
be an awesome time.
Can you
that is creepy, isn't it?
Let's get out, yeah.
Get out.
The phone is farting again.
Awesome, I know. Can you guys hear that?
One more,
get
yeah.
out.
Make one thing
that.
Known. That would be an awesome time. Can you hear that?
So that's a pretty clear one, and that's right in the lobby of...
Yo!
We've got sound effects coming from everywhere in the studio tonight.
There is one thing that I want to point out, guys. Those of you that are watching the webcast, you are listening to this broadcast through the built-in mics on the camcorder. That would explain why you're not able to hear the EVPs that Tim is playing. If you want to hear that audio portion, mute the sound on the webcast and go and listen to the live stream on Darkness Radio.
Do I need a beer?
Nice.
Do I need a beer? Yes.
Do I need a beer?
Now, what is the...
Who was that?
I can't remember. I think it was...
her name is Heidi.
Heidi, okay. Right, was down investigating, and she was able to get that. I'm just curious, what can we do when we're investigating bigger places like this? If we get a voice that says something like, get out.
Right.
I mean, is that something that we should address with the spirit? Or do you just get out? Do you respect that they don't want you in their space?
It's simple. Simple, simple, simple. If anybody's seen the movie The Others, you can kind of get an idea. But what you're dealing with is imagine...
Was she calling Nicole Kidman?
No, you walk into someone's house. Just walk into someone's house. What are they going to do? They're like, hey, get out of here. I don't know you. Just get out. You're in my house. You're dealing with a spirit, okay, a ghost that's no longer in the physical form, but still thinks it's alive or is still living there. That is its home. You're walking into its home, which, of course, is a disrespect if you go into somebody's house. They don't want you there. So, like, get out of here. You're bothering me. You're bugging me. You're an intruder. That's why they say that.
So you think it's just a knee-jerk, hey, kids, get off my lawn kind of attitude from
totally.
These kids?
Most of the time,
So do you ever, when you get the bad comment like that, do you ever turn it around and say, why do you want me to leave?
Yes.
Is there anything I can do to help you?
Yes.
Do you, and have you gotten conversation and from there?
Sometimes it's like, no, I just get out of here. I don't want you. And start screaming and yelling. And then you have to break down through that point. Doesn't always work, but sometimes it does.
All right. Patch, how about you? I mean, when you do these kind of investigations and you run against a nasty spirit like this, what do you feel is your active response to this? Should you just pick up and get your ass out of there and leave them alone, or should you, try to communicate with them further? Well, I know there's two different mindsets on this. You know, respect what the spirits ask,
right,
or confront them and try to deal with it.
Well, to be perfectly honest, Dave, I don't know if it has to do with the energies that I attract towards me. I don't know if it's dumb luck. I've only had one or two instances during investigations where I believe I have actually encountered something possibly malevolent. Did an investigation in a cemetery a number of years ago in Georgia, and didn't appear that anything was going on there at the time we conducted the investigation. And then I get home, and I'm in the bathroom getting undressed, getting ready for bed, and I notice that I have scratch marks on my arm going across my torso, across my lower portion of my left arm, and on my leg.
Rough night, huh, Pat?
Yeah.
Got to be careful with those $15 hookers.
Hey. No, Valentine's right around the corner.
You're not supposed to go into that aspect of the story.
Got to pay to play, buddy.
Right.
Yeah, I heard you an animal. Not just a hedgehog, but an animal.
Right. But this is, I think, really the one and only time, Dave, that I've ever had something really, quote-unquote, bad happen. And I don't even know if you could consider that an injury. You know, they were very light scratch marks on my skin, and they disappeared after a day or two.
Or so he told the wife.
That's hence where
you
the
guys
scratch
are
marks
impossible. You're going to get me busted here.
Hey,
come
man,
on.
You're a target right now.
I am, totally. I'm always a target. But, if I ever encounter anything, I think my next step would be to try and, say, hey, do you really want us to go, or is there some way that we could actually help you?
Patrick, you should know by now, no means no. Maybe that's why you keep getting scratched.
Trying to score.
All right, I'm just going to...
The line, would you like to see my Frank's box, never works.
See,
you know that.
Like, you all thought that us coming in here was going to make this a regular darkness show. No, come on now.
We're out of control. This year's classy. We got TV.
On that interweb thing.
Things will never be the same.
Now, do we have questions from the chat room as well, Tim, that are popping up to you? If you have a question, it's a lot easier if you PM them to Tim so that he can go in there. He's under Darkness Radio Tim. PM the questions to him because we can't keep up with how fast the chat room is buzzing through. So please just PM the questions over to Tim and he'll get them taken care of for you.
Papa Eclipse actually has a question. He wanted to ask, if a child dies, wouldn't they still be a child as a ghost?
Yes.
Not necessarily a demon.
Yes. Okay. Once they cross over to the other side, move into the light, they can take whatever form they want, namely an adult.
Okay, I think you already went over this one, but Belle also thought that when she was at the Palmer a while back, she found it to be a really peaceful place. Did you find anything or think it was ominous there, or was it exactly as she found it, relatively peaceful?
Well, I think it was very peaceful in many spots, but I do think there's a couple spirits there that were unrest, you know, weren't too happy. But that happens in a lot of places.
Chris, when you run against a spirit like that at a location that's like an overlord spirit that seems to be controlling or a negative influence on the other spirits, do you ever feel it's your job to try to combat that spirit and move them on, get them out of there?
Not necessarily. I know we talked about this earlier today in front of everybody. Is sometimes you're going to be dealing with a form of karma, spiritual karma that we don't understand. I mean, I don't care who you are. You just can't go in there and say, okay, there's a spirit here that's angry. It's holding this other spirit here and not letting them cross. You can't see them. Even though you may be able to communicate with them slightly as a psychic or medium, you have no way of really knowing the spiritual development that's going on or their understanding of what is occurring in that particular situation with both of those spirits. So there could be something going on that's a spiritual development for both of them that has to happen. And if you intrude or try to prevent that, you could be affecting their karma or their destiny. So I think what you have to figure out is if it's causing problems to people in the living that are still there, and if there's many other spirits that are being held there by this spirit, then maybe then you need to get involved. But how do we really know that just by us getting involved, we're going to help that spirit? How do we know?
Yep. I guess that's a pretty good question. What'd you say, Tim?
We're about 30 seconds from theme. I got a really good question when we come back from the top of the hour.
Okay, we're going to come back after the top of the hour. We're going to be coming back with Chris and Patrick. We're going to be talking about the use of psychics and sensitives on a paranormal investigation. When is it a good idea? What are tips and hints that we should use when investigating with a psychic? And we'll also be talking to Patrick, our current ghost geek here, about technology in the paranormal field. And are we becoming too dependent on it or on psychics? So stay with us. We'll be taking your questions. We'll be talking more. And you'll be able to see us on Paranet.tv. You can watch it live and see a little bit of our fun. So check it out. And we'll be back with you. As long as we can keep the technical errors out of control. Things are going crazy here.
Too much technology.
That's right. Too much technology. So stay tuned. Listen to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Thanks for joining us here. We'll be back with Hour 2 in a few minutes.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.